My guest today is Katie Wrigley. Katie spent the bulk of her adult life suffering. Her answer to that was to run from herself by plunging deeply into denial and numbing herself however she could through a demanding career, drugs, binge drinking, and more. She suffered with chronic pain for more than 8 years and was eventually rendered disabled by the time she was in her early 40s. When Katie wanted her life back, she tried many healing modalities with varying degrees of success. In 2020, she was introduced to the system that finally allowed her to harness the power of her mind to heal, Cogna Movement. Katie has fully embraced Cogna Movement both personally and professionally and became certified in 2021. Katie didn't only get her life back, she created a better life than she ever thought possible, even while she was still healing. Katie is also the host of the highly successful Pain Changer podcast. Welcome to Interspecies Evolution. I'm your host, Ginny Jablonski. The purpose of this podcast is to highlight the nexus between human sentience, our conscious awareness of ourselves as spirit in a body, and how this understanding can lead to our awareness of animals as sentient beings as well. Initially, I have gathered more than 36 people with unique experiences and education, inviting them to share their journey to self-awareness and how it has affected their relationships with both animals and plants. If you are interested in these topics, seeking inspiration on your own journey of awakening, or simply love animals, I hope you find these conversations supportive. From my heart to yours, now is the time for interspecies evolution. Hi, Katie. Thank you so much for joining us on Interspecies Evolution today. I'm very excited to hear your story, and I'm really looking forward to letting our audience know about your podcast, The Pain Changer, and how that came about. So please feel free to share with our audience your journey with pain and your journey coming to understand your soul purpose here on the planet.
Thank you so much, Ginny, both for having me on the show and for that wonderful welcome. I love any opportunity I have when I get to work with you. I always come away with something valuable that I can take into my life. So thank you so much for this podcast and for the work you're doing in the world too.
In full disclosure, I should let the audience know that you and I are friends and we are both Cogna Movement practitioners. And I don't know how you felt, but when I met you, my bones vibrated. I just thought, this is somebody that I know. I know her on a soul level, and we are going to know each other moving forward. And here we are 2 years later. So please go ahead and continue.
Yeah, and I felt the same as well. And I still remember one of our first meetings. It was virtually. We didn't meet in person until last year. You had really received insight on something I was working on and manifesting for myself. And just so you know, that has actually come to fruition, full fruition. My body is stronger. I don't have pain anymore. That was exactly what you visualized. And I remember when you said that visual, you said, oh my gosh, I see this strong body. It's capable of hiking. It's capable of this. It's capable. And you're right. It is. I have that body now. So your words that day really helped encourage me, Ginny. So thank you so much for that.
Wonderful. Let's share with people.
Yes.
Your circuitous, my circuitous journey and how we got to this point and what really has ultimately put us over the edge will come a little further down the line. But please share, because I know there are so many people out there that have similar circumstance to both of us.
Absolutely. That's been what I've seen too. So for most of my adult life, as I look back until recent years, I was suffering in some way, shape, or form with physical pain, anxiety, depression. Suffering was just my norm. I felt like I was trapped in my body. I had severe, very high amounts of chronic pain for more than a decade. It started somewhere in the 90s. I'm not even really sure how to quantify when it started because it came on a little bit slower than it left, actually. The result of that, it would have been so easy for me to just say, oh, the actions in my life have done that. And there are some components of truth to that. I was a skydiver for a while. I was not very good at landing at all. And that's a big reason that I have all these injuries. But if it was that easy to say, oh, okay, I was just a bad skydiver, then I wouldn't have had chronic pain. The pain wouldn't have began more than a decade before I started skydiving. And the way that I healed would not have been the way I healed. And none of this would have happened if it was that easy. And as I started to embark on a healing journey, by the time 2018 came around, just to back up, I was disabled. I was on 5+ months of long-term disability from work. I was about to shift into full long-term from short-term. The company I worked for at the time had amazing benefits. So it was still technically short-term. The prospect of long-term disability just did something to my mental state I could not handle. And at that point, I had been limping for 1.5 years. My right knee had caused me issues. I wound up getting a replacement. My body didn't heal well because of everything else that was going on. The surgery was actually picture perfect. The surgeon is brilliant, one of the best in the state of Colorado. And my body did not like that at all. My back was a mess. As I started to do more imaging, they found that I had 6 bulging discs bulging in different directions, worse than scoliosis. I had actually knocked more than 2 inches off of my height. Plus, both shoulders were screwed up. I had tendonitis in the right shoulder, frozen shoulder on the left. The facet joint on my L5, those little spiny things leaving the spinal column that feed peripheral nerves to the rest of your body, that one was gone on my L5. We assume I broke it, but we don't really know because there's nothing there to really see. And all of that culminated into this miserable experience. And I was in my early 40s and I was thinking, this cannot be as good as life gets. There has to be more. There has to be. There's no way that this is. I used to jump out of planes. I'm not accepting disability as my prognosis here. Like, no. And so I started my wellness journey and really started to embark on that. It started with meditation and it started with loving my body. And I thought my coach was nuts at the time, Jenny. I'm like, she wants me to do what? But I had hired her for a reason. I was trusting my intuition that she was right for me. And within 3 weeks, I stopped limping for the first time in 1.5 years. And I thought, okay, this holistic and mindset work, this is not BS after all. There's a lot of validity here. I'm going to continue. And I did. And around 2020, I had made so much progress. But around 2020, I still had unrelenting nerve pain down my left leg. And my leg was getting weaker as a result. So I had gotten to a point I could climb mountains again. But as the pandemic and all of that stress was starting to set in, it was really impacting my body again. And I was not able to resolve that pain no matter what I did until someone led me to Cogna Movement. And that was the piece that changed my life. And that was the key for me that has led me to these pain-free days that I get to enjoy now.
Can you share a little bit about your personal, your inner journey, your self-awareness, your state of mind, and sort of go back and give us a parallel to that understanding about the pain in the body? And when you worked with the coach, within weeks, you were walking better. That's wonderful. So How did your spiritual journey and inner awareness evolve?
That is a great question. They went hand in hand. As I was coming out of pain, my spirituality got stronger. When I first started to talk to my coach, she asked me, what do you believe? And I said, you know what? I don't know anymore. I think that there's something out there, but I just don't know. So I really wasn't attached to source. I wasn't in any sort of regular spiritual practice. And that was apparent. And as I started down this course, it allowed me access to my subconscious mind through multiple different modalities. And I found that I had been running from a severe trauma that I had endured as a child over the course of years. And it wasn't from my family. It was from someone else outside of my family that we had trusted. And my parents had no idea that it had happened to me at all. And that, as it turned out, had really dictated the course of my life. It was a huge source of anxiety, of depression. And until I started working with that coach and another coach I was working with at the time, because I had made such a mess, I needed more than one coach at that point to help myself. And they were the first people that I let see me, Jenny. I had hidden so much of myself the same way that trauma hid for me. I hid myself from everybody else, and no one really knew me because I didn't let them, not even my best friend who knows me better than anyone else these days. But those coaches were the first ones that let me start to face who I was. And this disconnected, alienated persona of mine was deeply impacting my physical body and my mental state alike.
Was there a point where you felt overwhelmed, or the reality of the responsibility of coming to terms with that journey? For me, there was a moment where I thought, oh, this shit is getting real. there is no turning back, because once you reach a state of some level of awareness, as I just said, you can't turn back. And then you're aware of how effective the work is, and you begin to commit yourself to that path of self-inquiry and self-awareness. Mm-hmm. So how did that evolve for you?
It kind of started to evolve without me realizing it. And historically, I've had huge resistance to dealing with anything, especially my shit. I have done whatever I can to try to avoid that. And that had been true with even in this work too. I'm sort of like a cat being held over a bathtub, like, oh, I don't want to do it. But then I'm like, okay, my choices are permanent disability and letting go of everything I wanted to do in this life, because it required travel. It required things I was not physically capable of at the time. Or I could get over myself and plunge into this healing journey. And I'd had models, I'd had mentors. So I knew there was validity to it. But much like you said, when you get to a certain point, and my point was just a few weeks into working with my coach, because I had gotten such a big impact, it's like, oh, I'm in this. And I was glad, because this road is not, it's not always easy. It's always worth it, always, but it's not always easy. And sometimes it can be very lonely too. It's just you and source. And sometimes when we forget that we're all one, that can lead to feeling incredibly disconnected and lonely. And my commitment to healing is what got me through those really lonely times where, you know, I'd just be me, my cats and my dog alone in my house in Colorado, bawling my eyes out in loneliness and feeling more miserable than I thought I had ever felt my whole life, which wasn't true. I was actually much more miserable before I started doing any of the healing work. But as you get your awareness going, it's like, oh man, this level is rough. I want to get past it. And then you do, and you feel so much better.
Well, your sharing is bringing tears to my eyes and calling to my mind a memory that I haven't thought about for 2 or 3 years. And that was about a year after my near-death experience. I remember writing a letter to God. Oh, wow. That letter to God basically said, and I have a photo of it in my old phone, which I can easily bring forward and share. I knew I was lonely. I was lonely, and I couldn't find anyone that saw things, felt things, knew things the way I did. And so I wrote a letter to God, and I won't do justice to it, but I basically asked for a sense of community, for friends who understood me and respected me, and to believe that I deserved those friendships. So there was a part of me that knew what was preventing me from having community. There truly was. What you are highlighting here, Katie, is one of the reasons why I have created this podcast, to help people know that they are not alone. And although we may not have a physical community in our neighborhood, our town, our city necessarily, but through the internet, through social media, through groups of like-minded individuals, us as cognitive movement practitioners and other spiritual groups that I know you're a part of and that I'm a part of, we do eventually find that community. It is part of a journey. We won't be alone forever.
Absolutely. And I love how you said that. And the cognitive movement family is absolutely, they are my tribe. that was probably, with the exception of a couple of people who I hadn't really met, their communities, that was the biggest source of people where I felt like I belonged in my adult life. I never felt like I belonged anywhere. And that loneliness I spoke to, I want to touch on that again for a moment, because I know this is similar to other people's experiences too. I never really actually got suicidal, but there was a very long stretch in there where a couple people I know did commit suicide. And Ginny, I actually envied them. I envied them for having the strength to do what I couldn't do. And thank God I did not have that strength, because I had no idea how much better life was going to get. But I still remember, and it followed by a massive bawling session, just crying my eyes out. In my meditation room, sitting in front of my altar on my beanbag, my entire body aching and missing my friend that I had just learned had killed himself. And also at the same time going, what would that be like? And just wanting to experience it that bad just made me so emotional and so sad to realize and hear myself think, oh my gosh, I actually don't want to be here anymore. That is terrifying. And I'm so glad that I didn't have that strength, because it wouldn't have been a move of strength. It actually would have been a move of weakness. And I would have missed all the amazingness that has come in my life since then, which is so much I can't even list in this podcast. It's, my life is so fulfilling now. It looks nothing like it did that morning in Colorado.
Well, I too had many times where I was in the emergency room writhing in pain, begging God to take me off the planet, just absolutely begging and crying, and just in front of my husband, can't this be enough suffering? What can the purpose possibly be for all of this suffering? How am I making anything better in the universe by suffering this much? And I think there are many people listening to this podcast right now that have had those moments, as you and I have. And I, too, can say that it gets better. Well, for each of us, there will be different root causes, of course. So we can't really sort of paint you or me with the same brush, let alone the audience with the same brush. But know that energetically, psychologically, spiritually, there are causes for every thought we have. And every emotion we have creates a chemical in the brain. I always say our brain is a pharmacy. And our mind, our emotions are the prescribing doctor. Once we begin to get some coaching, some awareness around how to investigate our emotions, how to investigate our thoughts, how to unpack the feelings that we're having and the unprocessed memories, our brain begins to create different chemicals. And all of the processes of the body, it all shifts and changes. And you and I both are a testament to that as not only a fact, but absolutely our reality. And sharing our journeys, I hope, is going to be very helpful for many in the audience today.
I hope so. And I think so. I know I felt really empowered by listening to other people's journeys who have echoed my own and seeing myself in their story too. And that's exactly why I'm as open with my history as I am, is I know that it helps other people to hear, you know. And I, those years I was miserable, I was mired in addiction. I was mired in self-destruction. I was continuing to make my journey harder. I was judging the crap out of myself left and right. I did some past life regression. I understood things that I had done in those lives. And I had a lot of guilt and judgment around that, that did not serve me at all. Like, how in the world is something I did back in the 1600s going to help me now? But making peace with that to move forward and allowing myself to become a better person because of that understanding, that was something I could get on board with. But it took some time for me to be able to break that judgment. And that was a huge piece of what was within my former experience of pain.
Well, for those in the audience, Katie, that have never heard of Cogna Movement before, at some point, I certainly hope to interview Bill McKenna and Liz Larson, the co-creators of Cogna Movement. Can you give a description of how Cogna Movement works and how it has helped you?
Yes. So it is a system utilizing a ball. I like to call it my magic ball because it looks crazy. It's a beautiful ball. It's like a soccer ball, and it has all of the chakras on it, all the energy centers in the body. And then its premise, cognitive movement is a way to be able to change the brain through the body. We can actually make physical changes to the brain. Pain actually makes physical changes to the brain. We can do different types of changes with cognitive movement. And at its core, you're really focusing on the feeling in the body, and we're speaking to the neurology, meaning the subconscious, not the logical mind. We're going deep into that subconscious mind, which for those of you who may not have too much experience with it, the subconscious mind is running the show 95% of the time. So imagine what is available to you within that when you start to learn how to access it. And the premise behind cognitive movement is that our body is expressing for us the emotion that our mind cannot. So what does that mean? When I go back to my own experience, there had been this trauma that I had been in deep denial about, and that denial ran in my body for 40 years. It did a lot of damage during that time, and I'm still healing that. I've been on a healing journey for 4 years, was on a path of destruction for 40. It's going to take a little time to unwind that path of destruction, and I've had so much progress in that time. I am got all the patience in the world to continue my healing journey now. What it's done is it helps you to access those pieces, the emotions that came up, the shame that was around that trauma, the guilt, the anger. Oh my gosh, I used to be mired in anger. I was pissed off at the world for 40 years. Like any of the bio-well images or the energetic readings that I did through aura readings or anything, my liver always came up inflamed. And it was easy for me to say, oh no, that's because of my genetic condition with hemochromatosis. No, it's not. It was because anger was sitting in my liver. I was able to release those. And the way we do that in cognitive movement, we're focusing on the feeling in the body. You can actually look down at your body. And you, as we're focusing on this, we're moving the ball in specific ways that are going to utilize our learning centers, kinesthetic, auditory, and visual. As we're moving the ball, it's also helping us shift energy. It's helping to move information between the two hemispheres of the brain, allowing access to solutions that you may not be able to get otherwise. There's a lot of eye movements in there too that allow us to access play cells attached to memories as part of these patterns. As a full mind-body system, we're able to permanently break apart those patterns and shift into a pattern that serves us again. Because me holding a pattern of anger for 40 years, that did nothing to serve anybody. All it was doing was hurting my body. The people I was angry at, they didn't care. But being able to forgive them, being able to let go of that anger, that served me. And so that's kind of a big nutshell of how cognitive movement can work and help you start to shift into new perspectives.
On the cognitive movement website, which is just cognitivemovement.com, there is a lot of scientific research shared with respect to EMDR, which is a modality that is used in psychotherapy. You don't have to have a master's degree or a PhD to be certified in EMDR, but EMDR is one of the premises, one of the sciences behind cognitive movement, as well as neuro-linguistic programming. It incorporates Taoist principles, Chinese medicine principles. Many other neuroplasticity conversations come into play, and Bill and Liz are just wonderfully dedicated people to supporting humanity and helping us all, those who are willing to go on a journey such as this, to becoming more self-aware and empowered and be able to heal in ways that I think hasn't been possible in the last many decades. You know, so many people go to therapy or a psychiatrist, and we end up walking away with medication that just dulls the senses and, you know, interferes with the chemical productions artificially in our brain. And cognitive movement helps us to do this organically and authentically and truly get to the source, to the cause of these imbalances. And it really is wonderful. Now, I know you've done a lot of other research, though, Katie, and you started a podcast called The Pain Changer, and you've got a lot of doctors and experts and physical therapists and neuroscientists and counselors and mindset coaches on your podcast. Can you tell me a little bit about how you decided to create this podcast and to focus on changing pain for people as a purpose, as a life's mission?
Yes. So I knew that this was my purpose as I was healing. That was one of the earlier realizations that really helped motivate me is, oh, this is one of the things I get from being in pain is now I can teach other people how they can change their own experience. They don't have to stay in pain. They don't have to accept that this is permanent. They can actually make a different choice. And that really fueled me in the early days in there. And one of the things I realized, you know, cognitive movement's a new modality. Some of you listening may be like, well, I've never heard of it. Well, I'm not surprised. It's only been around for about 5 years now. And the impact that it's had in that short time is nothing short of mind-blowing. There's even brain scans that show the efficacy of this. I wanted to also, similar to you, I wanted to open the world of other healing possibilities to other people. And I found that this collaborative energy, so part of it was I wanted people to know about cognitive movement. And I wanted them to have time to get to know me and to establish trust with them so they know what I'm about. And for anybody who feels resonant with my messaging, but cognitive movement isn't the only healing modality there is out there. And so I want people to know that there's more than one that may be intimidating, or it may just be something that just isn't resonating with you and you want to look for a different modality. And there isn't a silver bullet. It's not one thing. Cognitive movement was a massive piece, but I also utilize naturopaths and supplements and sometimes plant medicine and other energy healing work at times to supplement my healing overall, even if cognitive movement is the main purpose. And so that's what I really wanted to do with my podcast, is both talk about my own journey, my own experience, and also highlight other people out there who have had amazing results utilizing healing in different ways than how you and I do. And it's incredible, you know, both because everybody's saying very similar things and they're all getting healing in different paths. And it just gives me so much hope overall of how many people I may be able to reach with that show to say, gosh, this is what else is available to you to heal. You do not have to accept whatever your allopathic doctor has told you. You can make a different decision. Always check with your medical provider first, please. If they aren't the best one, then I encourage you to do more research to find someone who does feel like a better fit for you. But you do not have to accept whatever prognosis the doctor gave. And I think my podcast is really starting to show people that, because I've had guest over guest who have come on and have been told they were going to die if they didn't continue whatever, and they haven't done it in 7 years and they're more alive than they've ever been. Or they were ignored when they had stage 4 thyroid cancer or something horribly significant in their lives. And they have turned that around. They have let go of the limiting beliefs that the doctors put on them. They have found their own outcome.
I am so grateful for you. And I was so thrilled that in the first few days of your podcast, you had more than 500 downloads. It was within a week.
Yes. Yes, I think I hit 600 something in the first 48 hours of the launch, which I was really, really excited about. I launched with 10 episodes, so I got a lot of positive feedback on that, but it's been wonderful. I just love everything in this podcast world, the collaboration, all the different ideas, all the things I'm learning. It's just beautiful.
You know, something you said earlier about overwhelm and information overload. There is a lot of information out there. There are so many different perspectives and systems of beliefs about energy and consciousness. I'm just hoping that on this podcast, we are inspiring curiosity for people to look a little deeper or begin to look outside the realm, as you said, of allopathic medicine and look for alternative explanations or sources for pain, for illness, for imbalance. And to be able to, with support, go on a journey, be an archaeologist of our own consciousness and begin to make different choices. But I will say that phrase is a bit of a button for me. And you said that earlier, you said to be able to make a different choice. And if you don't mind, because this is an interspecies podcast, I'd like to give you an example of an animal who couldn't make a different choice. And this was so random and so authentic and so profound for me. I think it would make sense to share it in this podcast today.
Please do.
So I was working with a horse at a barn. The horse was owned by a long-term acquaintance of mine, and I had worked with this horse a couple of times, really trying to get to the bottom of some personality quirks, behavior issues, some rebellious behavior. And I showed up at the barn one day, and this is in Arizona where it's very, very hot, and the horse was a fjord.
Oh, and wow.
He said to me, "It is so hot here. I just can't stand it. It's so hot. My every waking moment, all I can think about is how hot I am, how uncomfortable I am. And I just don't know what to do about it." Well, right away, my human mind came in rather than just sort of stick with it, which was perfect, as you'll see. I turned to my girlfriend and I said, "Well, there are a lot of fjord riding clubs in Southern California and Arizona, and I'm aware that many fjords are existing. Are other people having experiences with their fjords where they're unhappy or have a lot of behavior problems?" And she said, it's not a thing. It's nothing I've heard about." So I, in my humanness again, I said, "Well, do you think that your friend who has a fjord in Southern California," because I knew that she belonged to this club and she had one in particular that lived in Riverside.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Do you think that your friend might believe in animal communication? Do you think she would let me talk to her horse? Because it might be fascinating to talk to another fjord who lives in a very hot, dry climate and find out what their perspective is." And all of a sudden, her friend's horse just showed up in my vision and said, "Hi, I'm here." And I said, "Well, I guess we didn't need the permission of the, if the spirit of the animal wants to come and talk to us." So I asked my friend, "Is that okay? Because your friend's horse is here and he's ready to talk." And he said, "Go for it." I asked my soul, "Is this appropriate and ethical?" And okay, we can't stop spirit from doing what spirit's going to do. So you may as well hear what the animal has to say. So the horse says, "I can't tell you why it worked or how it worked, but all I can tell you is this used to bother me too. And one day I just made a choice to be happy no matter what." And all of a sudden, my friend's horse came forward and showed me like a Grand Prix FEI equine jumping course with all of these fences. And in front of every fence was like a garage full of junk. It was the trash we hadn't taken out, the dirty laundry, representing in your vernacular and my vernacular, all of our unprocessed memories, all of the emotion that the body is expressing, the personality. And he said, "I can't. I'm too traumatized." And that was the first time that this particular horse revealed to me all of his trauma, sitting in piles in front of every fence. He couldn't jump the fences. He couldn't navigate the choices because he was so traumatized. And you and I both know on an esoteric level that trauma is held in our nervous system, but metaphorically, you know, and energetically, the energetic imprints of that are in our chakras, which represent empowerment, self-worth, healthy relationships, and doubt and frustration and all of those more esoteric conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were able to then have a conversation about moving forward and him being now willing to show me the trauma, which means we can then work on the trauma because you can't force someone. For example, if this was the first time I met you, you might not want to share your life story with me and the intimate details of a trauma when you were a child. It might take us a few times to get to know one another, right?
Yeah, of course.
And that unfortunately happens with animals. And I find sometimes people just can't afford multiple sessions when animals and humans definitely benefit from multiple sessions. As we know with cognitive movement, it's not a one-time quick fix. You know, we are multi-layered. We humans, especially those that live in industrialized nations and especially United States, there's a lot of stress and a lot of trauma and a lot of fear in our society. And we have accumulated that in layers upon layers upon layers. And so the thing that really struck me about that conversation with the horse is how many people, and going back to the fact that I said I make making choices is a trigger for me, because so many people in esoteric circles literally tell people all you have to do is make a choice. And it does work for a very small percentage of people to just make a choice to be happy and then wake up one day and everything is wonderful. Most people, it looks more like making a choice to go on a journey to figure out what is creating, right? Yes. But the just making a choice is a bit of a misnomer. And those of us who know and see and understand the nervous system and how it works and the subtle bodies and the chakras and the interrelation to all of that, the nexus really between the non-physical bodies and the physical body, as well as the mind, we know that there's a little bit more to it. Certainly don't begrudge anyone healing, magical healing, or making a choice. And if that happens, wonderful. But those people who have these interests like you and I know that it took us years to uncover the truths that were creating our pain, our illness, our disease. And it was multi-layered, and our healing has taken many paths, not just one modality. We have utilized many different perspectives. So I just wanted to share that because I felt that that really puts a fine point on some people, like the horse from Riverside. He just said, I don't know how it worked, but one day I just decided I was going to be happy no matter what. And I was. And then the horse in front of me in Arizona said, I've got too much trauma. I just can't. And what does that bring up for you?
I really love everything you said in there, Jenny. And I'm glad that you really expanded on the choice. It is not easy in every case, much to your point, to be able to make that choice. And when you have patterns running from trauma, like that horse did, like I used to, like you used to, those are going to make an impact, and it is going to make it more difficult for you to choose it. It may not be available to you yet, and that is okay. You do not have to push yourself past anything not available to you yet. And I love to think that at all times, everything is possible. Does that mean it's available to me right now? No, it does not. And it takes time to build up this muscle, to build up the ability, the ownership, the responsibility to take that deep look at yourself. Like when I first started this work 4 years ago, there is no way in hell that I could laughingly look at myself as my own worst enemy in my own experience in the past. I wasn't ready to take that level of ownership yet. I am now. But there was a lot of work, a lot of meditation, a lot of clearing, a lot of cognitive movement, a lot of other energy work between that beginning of that journey and where I am now, where I do see. And then this is, everybody's is unique. I'm not saying you are your own worst enemy at all. I was my own worst enemy. And that's where I am in the journey. It's very empowering for me to understand that, because now by owning that, I stay out of my own way more often than not, because I know my propensity to get in my own way and to make my life more difficult. But it is not simple and easy, or not synonyms. And it's not just, I'm going to be happy and you are. It's always a choice to you. It may not be available right now or on this given day, but I encourage you and I invite you to try again later. Most likely, there will be a day in the future that that is available to you.
It's always said that healing is a process, not an event, at least in the circles I run in. And it has been for me, and I know for you as well, a constant rediscovering of ourselves. And nobody is out there every day saying, I am going to consciously make the choice that brings me the most pain. I am going to consciously wake up today and purposely sabotage myself. No. That's not what you're saying when you're talking about own worst enemy. You're talking about those underlying patterns and belief systems and traumas that you had stuffed down or being held as energy in the body. That's the part that managed the subconscious that we speak to as being our own worst enemy. Because yes, it's us. But if we were consciously aware, if we understood as human beings that that is what is creating our reality, not just our mantras and constant outward trying to manifest something different, then I think more and more people would go down these paths, certainly.
Right. Again, I love what you said there. You're very eloquent in the way that you are able to speak to the healing world. And you're bringing something to mind that it was going back to that simple, easy thing again. You know, I mentioned before that I had been an addict and that I did some recreational drugs. So that behavior of mine, now that I can look at it in hindsight, that behavior, that was the pattern running that I wasn't good enough. And you couple that with deep shame, and shame is this deep belief that there's something wrong with me. And when you have shame in your body, you're going to continue to do things to show, hey, you know what? There is something wrong with you. And so those patterns in there, and no, I didn't consciously think any of this. This is what I found in the subconscious. Most of us wake up, like I said, the subconscious is running 95% of your day for you. That's just the way we all are. Those are all happening on their own. Those are all running the show. And a lot of your thoughts are subconscious and they're running the show for you too. And much to Ginny's point with the awareness you bring, that's how you can start to shift this for yourself. And it's like anything else. It is a muscle that takes time to develop, to start to look at things differently. And please give yourself a break as you're embarking on this journey. It will definitely make it easier for you if you can have grace and forgiveness for yourself.
One of my favorite stories to tell is when I first started monitoring my own thoughts. And the very first time that I, in conscious awareness, had a thought that was not kind or loving, and I said, no, wait a minute. That's not a kind or loving thought. I don't choose to have that thought. And as everybody knows, I'm very clairvoyant, I'm very visual. And in my screen, in my esoteric field of vision, just like a news crawl, I saw the sentence that I was technically rebuking, right? I was saying, no, I do not choose that. It backed up
It
tried to hook on again in that neuro pathway.
Uh-huh.
It tried to come back and say, oops. You know, error. Oh, no, come back. No, start over. And again, I said, no, but I was laughing because I literally saw it come back and try to get me again. And I was never so happy that day in seeing that and realizing these thoughts are just patterns. They're old ways of being. They're old habits. They're old personality traits. And some of them aren't even ours. And we're right? just listening and we think it's us. And that's why I love giving people I don't know if you've ever heard of my process called the spiritual car wash. It's free on my website under resources, free content, if anyone's interested. But the spiritual car wash, my soul gave that to me one day because I was walking around and I saw all these people with all this junk on the outside of their auric field. And I asked my soul, you know, what is that? My soul said, oh, that's everybody else's opinions and projections and shoulda, woulda, coulda, and you can't do this and you won't succeed. And I said, oh, well, do I have that? Am I so like, you think? I said, okay, well, what can I do about it? You know, what can I do about this? And so my soul gave me this process of asking for the light of grace to shine down on me and the violet flame to cleanse away everything that does not belong to me. And it literally just sticks to us like sticky notes or, you know, those little suction arrows that you can shoot out of little toys. And when we do that, it's almost like you can let your shoulders down and open your shoulders and breathe and you feel yourself. You're not feeling the burden, the weight, the metaphoric weight, the energetic weight of everybody else's opinions, projections. And it's so liberating. And I promise you, the errant thoughts, the odd sort of where did that come from kind of thoughts will significantly decrease if you do that spiritual car wash every time you come home from the baseball stadium or a concert or the grocery store, or, you know, wherever that might be. It's very, very helpful. It's so exciting to go on a path that you and I have gone on and, you know, to really live to tell the story and to be willing to share the story and to know, as you did, as I did,
that there is a reason all of this is happening to me. There is a reason, and I am meant to share the shifts and the changes in my reality when I take responsibility for what is happening within my own mind, within my own body.
Yes, beautifully said. And I just want to vouch for your spiritual car wash. Thank you for the reminder that it is out there. Sometimes I have so many tools in my toolbox. Sometimes I forget some of the easiest ones. I have done that, and it does make a big difference. You know, and what you had said there, that's exactly why I like to say that this is happening for me, not to me. Because even as I look back, all the things that I would have classified as mistakes, as things I did, quote unquote, wrong, if I had not made those air quote mistakes, if I hadn't been quote unquote wrong, I would not be exactly where I am today, which is a beautiful place for me to be. And all of this has happened for me to be able to be of service to other people. You know, and I, you mentioned talking to the horse before. That is one of the gifts. As we start to raise this awareness and we heal more and more, you're going to be amazed at how much you pick up from animals. I hadn't even told you this, Ginny, but this weekend I went to, well, I did tell you, I went to CognoConscious, the big event that Liz and Bill host every so often. And one point we were in a meditation, and for the first time in my life, I channeled my dog. I wasn't even trying to channel her, but it was something that I was working around, and she was a part of it. And suddenly she came in with very, very clear messaging for me, things that I had never even heard of, that I didn't even know existed. I could immediately go online, look into it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, my dog just taught me something. Whoa. It was so cool. And my cats, I hear from them all the time now. And those, that was not available to me a few years ago. And channeling my dog, that had never happened. And I can see in her behavior how that strengthened our bond, and me getting rid of all this junk before, you know, your horse showing those metaphorical jumps. I'm clearing all that out of the way. And it's allowing me to be more present with the animals and the people that I love so much in my life. And my animals give me so much. My dog is sleeping right next to me on the floor as we're doing this. And she's better behaved than she's ever been in her entire life too. And it's not that suddenly we hit a critical point of training. It's that my energetic signal has changed. So she feels more comfortable, more secure, more safe around me. And it's opening up these lines of communication I didn't even know were possible. And it was just so beautiful.
Well, there's another free video on my website that will support that. And that is the Pink Pillows of Love exercise. So if you haven't tried that yet, Katie, please try that. Oh, and with respect to the spiritual car wash and the other things I share, very authentically, just sharing my journey, I don't think any of us are immune to these outside influences, other people's stuff, you know. And these are just simple practices that we're never going to outgrow because we live on planet Earth. And if people can just do these simple, simple practices, I promise it will make a difference. Absolutely.
It really does.
Well, we're at about the 1 hour or so mark, Katie. I think that this has been so rich and so helpful for many people. And I am very grateful for you as a friend and a colleague that you've been willing to come and share your story here. And maybe next year, if you're not too busy with your own podcast, you can come back and share the next leg of your journey with us.
I would love to. And thank you so much, Ginny, both for this opportunity to speak to your audience, another opportunity to work with you again, and to be able to learn from you and your amazing expertise. And just thank you so much for the work you're doing in the world, too. You are just a wonderful human being. And I feel absolutely blessed and grateful that I get to have you in my life. Thank you.
That's very kind. Knowing that we can make different choices, knowing that there is hope, knowing that there are so many people like Katie out there, podcasts, different people trying to share, not trying, doing, sharing their experiences, whether it be Qigong, whether it be Tai Chi, whether it be yoga, meditation, mindfulness, breathing, some sort of coaching, belief system, past life work, whatever that looks like for you. do something. Because if we do nothing, there's one sure outcome. Very little will change.
Yes.
Sending everyone love until we meet again.
The information provided in this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional, medical, psychiatric, or veterinary advice. Our conversations are based on our life's experiences. We intend this podcast to be complementary and supportive. It is not intended to be a substitute for traditional medical, psychiatric, or veterinary care. If you need a doctor, a psychiatrist, or a veterinarian, please contact one immediately.